You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. I'm Morgan Lyon-Cotty from the Hinckley Institute of Politics, filling in for Natalie Gochner in the political center. And on the left side, we have Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning, everybody.
And on the right, we have Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning.
So, as is our practice,
it should be Jim Yin and Yang, right? That's what my wife said. That's what my wife said when she likes about the show is that Jim and I are like a good Yin and Yang, right? It's just funny. So.
It is. That's the whole fun of the show, right? So, as is our custom, let's
Jim's
start with
the
national stuff.
To be honest,
do you know the difference?
No.
Okay.
No.
So we keep, I know one of your gripes, Dan, last week was that we don't have enough happy Republican stuff.
Yes.
And I don't have it for you right with this segment.
There is no happy Republican
stuff.
So
I'm continuing your gripe. So we've still got this battle. I mean, how would you characterize this? We sort of have the old guard versus the new guard. And on Wednesday of this week, on Tuesday of this week, we found out that Jeff Flake from Arizona, who has a lot of Utah ties, pretty popular in Utah, fundraises here quite a bit, will not be seeking re-election and gave a pretty damning, can we say damning? I said it twice. Indictment of Trump and his administration.
Let me check the Carlin dictionary here.
And I thought it was so funny that there are a couple of words that were trending on Merriam-Webster's dictionary, and one of them was debase, because both Bob Corker and Jeff Flake said that about what's happening with the United States. But one of the things he said that really stood out to me was that in order to win the Republican primary, he couldn't do what he would need to do. He can't go that far right. He can't agree with the administration. And it sort of reminded me of our own Senator Bob Bennett, who after he lost, he lost in convention in 2010, said, I knew when I cast that vote for the bank bailout that I couldn't win re-election, but I felt like I had to be true to what I believed in and my, you know, my political ideology. So Dan, I know you know Senator Flake. What are your thoughts on all of this?
I mean, it's interesting because I think there's a human side to this that people just do not understand. And you know, the first time you put your name on the ballot, we were talking about this, where no matter what the office is for, some people are going to like you and some people are going to hate you. Just by putting your head up out of the foxhole, guns are aimed at you, right? And this is an element of politics that I think until your name's on the ballot, you never really comprehend. It's more intimately familiar to me now because my wife is learning these lessons running for city council. And so I think, you know, Jeff is a very good man. There's good men, there's great men, there's very good men. You know, he is very good. And he is a pure agenda, guileless kind of guy. I really like Jeff. He's right, though. If you look at his approval numbers in Arizona and where he's at, he's in trouble. And he's in trouble in the primary, and he's going to be he would be in trouble next year. What's interesting, if you want to drag
this because you know the guy.
Well, I know him, but
he's
I've also
a friend.
Well, a friend of mine works on his campaign.
It's nice to know that this is like a personal tie. This isn't like me reading it in a newspaper.
So I think though you can take this and apply this to Utah, because when you look at the numbers of Orrin Hatch, they're not that much better than Jeff Flake's, and that's where I think you look at this movement that's going on in the country. And it's interesting that it's becoming a wave. A lot of people thought maybe it was just going to be a blip and then Donald Trump be gone in 4 years and we never have to think about it again. But there's this wave going on that's saying, hey, there really is a swamp. And I think that's what the Republicans' inability to get something done, I don't think, fortunately, for my party's sake, I don't think it's helping Jim's party at all. In fact, if you look at the numbers on both sides, everybody has all the blame for not getting anything done thus far in a new Republican presidency. But what I look at is everybody is starting to agree. And this is the one thing I am concerned about, but I think Senator Flake is concerned about it. Orrin Hatch ought to be concerned about it. Is everybody saying, hey, if you're not draining the swamp, you're plugging it. And that's where Jeff Flake's in trouble, I think. What do you think, Jim?
You know, I think this is a critical moment in the history of the Republic. I think that serious people, including the Republicans in the congressional delegation in Utah, recognize that this isn't about draining any swamp. This is about a clearly incompetent, vulgar man who seeks to stay in power by dividing the country. And it's a whole new dimension. And what you're seeing in Corker and what you're seeing in Flake is the moral courage to stand up and say, you know what, if you love your country, if you want a future for your country, sometimes it's more important to stand up and speak the truth than it is to get reelected. And I don't see that, shockingly and horrifyingly, in our Utah congressional delegation. I see Orrin Hatch, and look at Mitt Romney, you know? Mitt said some terrible things about the president at the Hinckley Institute, called him a clown. You can look at the quotes.
A fraud,
and yet there he was, running up to Trump Tower, having dinner, sucking up, trying to be Secretary of State. Somewhere, somehow, we need more Jeff Flakes and less Chris Stewarts and Mia Loves who run into the bunker to see which way the political wind is blowing. It's disgraceful, and this may be a key moment in the history of our country. There's a movie called Mark Felt playing right now at the Broadway. And when you see the position that the country was in, and basically one FBI agent who stood up to everything else, these are moral decisions, and the Republican Party in Utah has been an abysmal failure. And one day, their children and grandchildren will judge them.
Yeah, it is interesting. It doesn't really feel like one of those times where one party messes up and the other party is celebrating and we can capitalize on this. Everybody just seems to be trying to wrap their heads around this.
I still think people are trying to figure out how Donald Trump won.
Yeah.
And what that means. And I think Senator Flake is now... back to the Senator Flake comment, I know that there is more popularity for Donald Trump in Arizona than there is for Donald Trump here in Utah. Donald Trump still got 45%.
But that's the lowest of any red state,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's the lowest of any state he won.
And you look at Arizona, he's still popular. He's got a very populist thing. And Arizona is right on the border. Mm-hmm. So they deal with more of the immigration issues than they do. So Trump is a very popular position as far as Arizonians are concerned. And so I look at this as kind of a weather vane for where I see it like Senator Flake does. He's concerned about where things are going. I'm concerned, but I'm also optimistic that this pendulum, you know, someone says, how do you define American democracy? It's a pendulum, always. And
yep.
It swings one way and it will swing back. And I wouldn't lose hope or lose faith. Everyone just needs to be vigilant. And I'm grateful for good people that stand up and willing to serve.
Yeah, in the words of Professor Alistair Moody, constant vigilance.
Yeah.
That's for all you Harry Potter nerds out there. All right.
She dropped Potter?
Wow. Always. Ooh. When possible, you drop Potter. So we just have a minute left in this segment. Let's hurry and talk about this sudden Democratic tie to the Trump dossier. I think this is so fascinating. They're not trying to deny it. They're almost embracing it. If it helps Mueller, we owned it.
Yeah.
Dan, you've got to have an opinion.
I argue that when you do something, it's always quick to give bad news early and take responsibility, accountability, than it is to try and hide and let things drag out like Benghazi did forever because everybody avoided accountability. So this is just another example where the Dems are actually applying what I think is the best thing usually to do, which is take responsibility, own it, and make it a strength. And they're running with it. And it's such a contrast to how the Republicans have done it, right? Because they got all mealy mouth and scared.
Give me a break. I'm missing the sin here.
Wait, Hillary with the Russians is not a problem.
Hillary Clinton ran candidate opposition, looking into what candidate Trump's tie to the Russians were? Whoa, not that. That's shocking. Give me a break.
All right. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Morgan Lyon-Cotty, joined by Jim DeBacchus and Dan McKay. In our next segment, we'll talk about local issues. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Morgan Lyon-Cotty filling in for Natalie Gochner in the Political Center.
Is there a hyphen between Lyon and Cotty?
No, I make it difficult to make it three words.
Oh,
And Morgan is actually a last name for a lot of people, so I just got three last names and confused people all over the place.
Yeah, I'm confused.
I'm sorry. I like my. I really like all three of my names, so yeah. I wanted to use them.
I can't. I don't want to cut that short.
Yeah, I've had many people give me their opinions and tell me that I need to just give up one of my names, and I've been unwilling to do that.
What if you gave up Morgan and just like, I'm going to be called Lion?
Lion Cotty?
Yeah. I'm Lion Cotty.
All right, I'll do it. I get enough mail for me as a man because of the Morgan. Mm. We got to move on. All right. Okay. We have so many polls. One of the fun things about being at the Hinckley is we get to do all these polls with the Salt Lake Tribune. And all of these are rolling out, so let's talk about a couple of them. And one of them is apparently we're already asking questions about the 2020 governor's race. Mm-hmm. And Jason Chaffetz, 24%, front runner. Ben McAdams, 20%. Spencer Cox, 11%. So you guys, I have to say, this surprised me. Hmm. Because people did not seem so happy with Chaffetz leaving and yeah. resigning so quickly into his most recent term. I mean, is this just name ID?
It's just name ID.
Because his last approval rating was in the 40s.
But that's how people vote. They vote on name ID.
We use shortcuts. We really do.
Dr. Morgan Lion Cotty.
The political science term is heuristics, but
yeah,
no one
exactly.
cares about that.
Yeah, that's right. Their problem-solving heuristic is if I can't do the research, I don't have the time, I go with the name I recognize. I know Chaffetz. Let's go.
I'm not sure Herbert is out of this, frankly.
What?
I'm not sure he's out of it. I think, he doesn't have a lot of places to jump.
He's going to have $3 million in the bank for his campaign.
That's right. I don't think. I think I don't know how we're going to recruit a Democrat. Michael Weinhold spent $3.5 million and didn't do better than Peter Cook, who spent a little bit. I just don't think we're competitive. And so that's difficult. And so we just need to look at the Republicans unless we can find somebody.
So if McAdams doesn't, well, he is running for Congress, but if he doesn't win, could he? Do you think he'd run for governor? Do you think competitive?
No. I mean, if that district isn't good for a Democrat, then certainly when you had all the rest of rural Utah, there's no shot at it.
Yeah, I was so surprised that Mike Weinholz didn't get more of a vote share, just with the money, with the business background. On paper, he was a pretty fantastic candidate.
He didn't catch on with the
voters. He did what I'm afraid Ben McAdams will have to do, which is he will have to go left to get the base. And to go left to get the base, if the Democratic Party forces him to go left, he really doesn't stand.
Ben McAdams is not philosophically what Michael Weinholz, who really is a Bernie Sanders kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
So did the Salt Lake Tribune pre-endorse Spencer Cox on Sunday with that profile on him?
That was one of the most uncomfortable articles I have read in a long time. I really felt like the Tribune should have changed its Facebook status to in a relationship with Spencer Cox. And I like Spencer, so, you know, he's a great person. I read that article. First of all, it was written by Lee Davidson, who has never had a positive thing to say about another human being that I have ever read. So take Lee Davidson's article and the writer, and then look at the article and then read the content of it. It was this giant puff piece about Spencer Cox. And granted, Spencer is a good person and is polling well. I think 11% for lieutenant governor is probably better than most lieutenant governors do, because Spencer is a good man. And a lot of people see that. It will just be interesting to see how that race, pens out. And I'm with Jim. I actually don't know that Herbert's ruled it out either.
I think it's Greg Hughes's race to win or lose. Greg Hughes, after all of these years, 10 years of a kind of colorless, not much of a leader, governor, dithering, he is out there. And you know what? He's charismatic. He works a crowd well. He can raise money. I'm not sure how. And I love Cox as well. I mean, I think he's a terrific guy. There's a number of the candidates that are good. But frankly, I think you got to say Greg Hughes, it's his to mess up.
Mm. Yeah, and they've all been in the spotlight so much lately with Operation Rio Grande. It is sort of funny thinking about actually those gubernatorial aspirations. Are they all just sort of frenemies?
But look what happened.
Together?
Look what happened.
But that's
with
politics.
That was Hughes. It was Hughes first. It was Hughes second. It was Hughes fifth.
But does the public know that?
The governor got kind of blindsided, like he wasn't doing anything, because guess what? He wasn't doing anything. And then he decided to have a big meeting and stuck Spencer Cox in the middle of it, and Cox has done a pretty good job. But that wasn't leadership either out of Cox or out of the governor's office. It was out of Hughes. So I'm just saying he's done a good job now that he's there, but... somebody has to, or Greg could step on a landmine. I mean, there's a lot of time between now and the gubernatorial thing, and Greg is, he's the kind of guy that could step
on
a landmine.
Morgan's too literal for you to talk about
landmines. Well, I was just about to say, that escalated quickly.
Well, it's the truth, kind of. There's no room for that in politics.
That was like an Anchorman reference.
It wasn't like an Anchorman reference. It was an Anchorman.
That escalated quickly.
Wow.
Yeah, Rick killed a guy.
Anchorwoman.
Okay, Operation Rio Grande, we also did a poll on that. 63% of Utahns think it's been effective. This is so interesting to me because it's sort of too soon to tell, right? I mean, why are we so happy about this?
I think everybody
is it just
fed up with
pure
the
relief?
Issue. I think they're fed up
pure
and
relief.
They want action.
Yeah.
Everybody's not sure what the solution is. Right now, and this is what's been interesting about Operation Rio Grande, is there is definitely increase in crime and there is definitely increase in homeless presence throughout the rest of the valley. That isn't just now, it was a consolidated force and it was Operation Rio Grande. We have seen increase of theft as far south of Riverton and Bluffdale mm-hmm. in Salt Lake Valley. And that change is causing a lot of people to say, wait a minute, maybe homelessness is a bigger problem than we thought it was. Yeah. So in that way, now that it's not all, the locus of control is not in Jim's district anymore and it's everywhere else, it's becoming, I think, a bigger conversation and people want to see more done about it. I still do not think that any of them have an answer for how you're going to solve homelessness. We have been on this since the 80s. I mean, even the early Carter administration was trying to solve this problem. And he walked away from it.
Well, and do you remember Crossroads, back when Crossroads existed, how they were trying to play classical music to keep the punk kids and the homeless away from the entrances?
Downtown.
From the mall. Yeah, what is now City Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not new. That is not new for Utah or anywhere.
Sometimes I just get on issues, and one of the most fun parts of being a public official is you can kind of call people and they'll usually meet with you. And so I've talked to 4 or 5 with breakfast or with coffee or with Diet Cokes developers, these people that are building these apartment buildings everywhere, some of them at market rates, some of them subsidized. And to listen, I mean, these are really dynamic people. And the solution for a lot of homelessness, frankly, is building reasonable, green, up, subsidized housing, and just more general housing. The big issue is we have a shortage of 40,000 housing units in the state. And we, one way or another, by market or somehow, we're not going to get rid of homelessness until we face that and we get those units built and we get people in homes. So some of it isn't that. Some of it is people with abuse problems and substance problems and the rest. But some of it is just plain, we don't have enough places to put people.
Yeah.
Okay, do you guys want to do a lightning round? We have
okay,
all of these
away.
Initiatives. Initiatives are hard in the state. Remember, you have to get signatures, 10% of the vote turnout.
In 26 of 29 counties.
In 26 of 29 Senate districts, right? And it's rough, so we've got a lot going on. So we're going to do a ballot or a lightning round, and I want to hear your thoughts on it and how likely it is to get on the ballot and pass.
Okay, so quick, you're going to bring up all
so
of these.
So I'll bring them all
we'll
up. We're gonna,
okay,
this is
going to
be so fast.
Right,
it's going to be so
fast.
So boom, boom, boom.
I feel like Hughes in the ring. Boom.
So Medicaid expansion. We've got Senator Brian Shuizawa as part of this. Medicaid expansion. Healthcare coverage to 120,000. Dan is sleeping.
This one is a slam dunk.
I'm just getting ready because I know I need a nap with Jim talking.
Slam dunk. The people of Utah are for this money. The legislature, because of the wackies in their extreme in their party, are against it. People win out. It's going to get on the ballot, and it's going to win by the biggest margin of all of them.
Dan?
Budget by ballot. That's what I call this Medicaid expansion deal, right? Is how do you budget, how do you manage a budget with the ballot? With a ballot initiative. I don't know that it's possible. And that's the biggest problem with this initiative of all the initiatives. All the rest of them have substantive issues to go one direction or another. But this one is a direct hit to the budget, which is a primary function of the legislature, and I don't know how we're going to balance a budget with that sitting out there.
Well, and I think this one is so tricky because this is also such a national debate. So how do you message this when there's all these national or federal laws and even court cases that people are trying to understand?
You will see a push this next legislative session for Medicaid waivers. HHS is talking about granting this. And that would then, I think, get Jim happy because all the money that was intended to come from Obamacare will come to Utah. We'll just get it in a waiver and have Utah.
And we'll get it at 70-30 split instead of a 90-10. It's the dumbest thing imaginable.
Okay, Better Boundaries Initiative, nonpartisan group that will recommend new congressional and legislative districts after the next census.
Okay.
Meh. Okay.
It has no teeth. The legislature is... Whether you like it or not, I don't care. You've got an independent, nonpartisan group. They're still partisan people on those boards. They claim to be nonpartisan. They still have different feelings. I don't know how you are going to separate politics from redistricting. It just doesn't work. I am excited to see where the Supreme Court goes with it.
I'm so curious about that. Yeah.
Same with judges. You know, how can we expect people to be impartial? Everybody has something. An independent commission is leap years ahead of letting, for sure, politicians create their own. This is a weak, compromise, miserable thing. If they were going to put it on the ballot, they should have gone with a strong independent commission. It's all up to the governor now with the appointments and the rest. So I'm for it, but give me a break. Too much Republican negotiating in there.
Okay. Are schools now increasing taxes for education funding?
Okay. Why don't you just say,
Jim, what do you say?
$700 million. I met with this group several times. It's a group of good, civic-minded business people, but they're going with a wrong tax. They're going with a sales tax. They're going after the poorest of the poor, poor, poor to pay this. The way to pay for it was to take people making $500,000 and more a year. They could have raised $322 million. But this group said, no, we're not doing that. We're going after a sales tax for half of this money. I'm having a hard time on this one.
And really? I always think about Dan Jones on these ones. He always says that polling for initiatives is the hardest thing, especially if it involves a tax, because people will think that's great. Yeah, more money for schools. And then they'll get in that ballot box and have a gut check.
And my bill last year requires them to disclose how much it is to the average household and what their cost of their personal budget is. I think once people look at that number on the ballot, this thing's dead.
Okay, let's do one more, and then we got to get to gripes. Utah Patients Coalition, medical marijuana.
Overwhelming support. I mean, the polls, people want that. You got two groups that don't, the Republican establishment, the LDS Church, and they're going to pull out all the stops, probably behind closed doors. They have a tough time with an initiative because they... You know, there's no closed door there. It'll get on the ballot, and then the millions will roll in. I think it's going to be the most fun debate.
Dan?
I think Jim's right. I think it passes. It will be very interesting to see how forward the LDS Church comes out to look at this initiative. So I'm kind of watching that. But I think the polls are so overwhelming and the legislature has been so mealy-mouthed with this issue that I think it passes.
It's such an interesting, just broad and really eclectic base.
Yeah.
So interesting. Okay, Dan.
I'm glad we didn't talk about Count My Vote. I'm just sick of that.
Let's talk about your gripe. I want to hear your gripe for the week.
Yeah. Last week I was quite excited about one attorney in the state. Now I'm excited about another one. So I just keep aiming at my own profession, I guess. But the Salt Lake County DA's office has completely mishandled the Gary Ott investigation. Like, not just a little bit, like a lot. And not only that, but the county has known that there was a problem. I mean, the guy, it seems, based on the news reports, he was diagnosed before he was reelected back in 2014. So here we are in, 2017, and everybody just kind of let it go. And despite people knowing stuff at the county, it's just kind of going to be brushed under the table. And I'm not okay with that. There was clear abuse in several ways, and it's just wrong.
All right, Jim, what's your gripe?
I'll have to say my response to that next time. My gripe is what an incredibly beautiful, wonderful, exciting city we live in. Last night, Tuesday night, I went to the Eccles Theater to watch the Simon and Garfunkel story, and it turned out that wasn't playing there. As I was waiting for my tickets, it was this amazing Derek Hough story, you know, the dancer from How We Dance.
So you think you can dance.
So, yeah. So that place was full, and then when we got over to the Capitol Theater, it was completely rocking. People were all over the streets. The culture was flowing. This is working. We are becoming a world-class city, and it's so cool to be here.
I can't have a gripe after that. I love living in Utah, and I love our national parks, and I will pay $70 to get into that park. Mm. So maybe that was my gripe. But I just love those places. All right. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. Senator Jim DeBacus has represented the left. Representative Dan McKay has represented the right. I'm Morgan Lancotti in the Political Center, and our program was produced by the wonderful Emily Means. Thanks for listening.